Well, first I'd like to thank Alain for giving me the opportunity to present this work. And we're going back to cortical plasticity as I'm going to show you our results on the role of the homoprotein OTX2 in the regulation of cerebral cortex plasticity during critical periods of postnatal development and in the reopening of windows of plasticity in the adult. During precise periods of postnatal development, called critical periods, the cerebral cortex is plastic. So cortical plasticity means that there can be a remodeling of connections in response to changes in the environment. These critical periods are therefore learning opportunities, and you can see on this diagram that they are spread out over time during postnatal development, as the brain does not learn everything at the same time. So each cortical region represented here has a particular function, and it probably has its own critical period. We can see, for instance, that the sensory areas are plastic earlier during development than the regions responsible for more complex functions. But at the end of postnatal development, all these critical periods are closed, and plasticity is very limited in the adult brain. So these regions are represented here on a human brain, but we work on the humble mouse, and we study one particular critical period, that's the critical period for ocular dominance in the visual cortex. During development of the visual system in the mouse, this critical period starts after the opening of the eye at around postnatal day P20, has its peak of plasticity at P30 and closes soon after in the young adult. In the primary visual cortex, both eyes project in a region called the binocular zone. And in the binocular zone of the mouse, there is a natural dominance, an ocular dominance, of the afferences of the contralateral eye here in green on the afferences of the ipsilateral eye in red in the layer 4 of the visual cortex. So one way to measure this ocular dominance and its plasticity is by using monocular deprivation and in vivo electrophysiological recordings. So that's here. So if we close one eye by a monocular deprivation of about 4 days during the critical period, there is a remodeling of connections, and the afferences corresponding to the open eye partially take the place of the afferences of the closed eye. And so there is a shift in ocular dominance that can be measured by calculating the contralateral bias index, and this leads to a decrease in visual acuity for the closed eye once it's reopened. And this is measured by recording the visual evoked potentials. But once again, importantly, if this eye is closed before or after the critical period, plasticity is very limited and there is no change in the CBI and no change in visual acuity. At birth, there is a natural imbalance between excitation and inhibition in the cerebral cortex because the excitatory system matures during embryonic life, while maturation of inhibition happens during these critical periods of postnatal development. So before the critical period, the inhibitory system is immature and the cortex is not plastic. Then maturation of inhibition opens the critical period and cortical plasticity. And in the adult, the balance between excitation and inhibition is consolidated and the cortex is no longer plastic. And the maturation of a subtype of inhibitory interneurons is crucial for setting up the critical period. And that's the parvalbumin interneurons, so PV cells, PV interneurons, shown here in the layer 4 of the cortex. And we can see the maturation of these cells by immunohistochemistry in the cortex. So you can see that there are more cells stains for parvalbumin, and the staining is more intense after the critical period than before. Many factors have been implicated for the onset and closure of the critical period. And as I just said, maturation of inhibition is required for cortical plasticity. So the onset of the critical period is triggered by factors such as BDNF or GAD65V that promote the maturation of the PV cells. And this triggers a sequence of many molecular events during the critical period, which ultimately induce in structural changes. And then the critical period closes when molecular breaks gradually emerge to dampen plasticity in the adult. And among these molecular breaks are the perineuronal nets that you have already heard about. And so here and during the rest of this talk, they will be stained by the lectin WFA. So there are this special extracellular matrix that's condensed around the PV cells here in the layer 4 of the visual cortex, and their maturation coincides with the maturation of the PV cells during the critical period. the current view is that the brain is intrinsically plastic and that adult plasticity is dampened by these molecular breaks that limit excessive rewiring after critical period closure. But then this adult non-plastic state is reversible, and we can indeed induce plasticity in the adult cortex, either by lifting the molecular breaks, so for instance by disrupting the perineuronal nets, or by reinstalling lower levels of inhibition. And in the lab, we have identified the homoprotein OTX2 as one of the molecular factors that regulates plasticity in the visual cortex. So first, I'm going to present the key role played by OTX2 for the proper timing of both the onset and the closure of the critical period, and then how we can manipulate OTX2 to reopen windows of plasticity in the adult. But first, I need to introduce a special feature of homoproteins, and that's homoproteins are classical transcription factors that play a major role during embryonic development, and they all share the highly conserved DNA binding domain called the homodomain. But homoproteins are also paracrine signaling factors, and within the homodomain are present the sequences necessary for the intercellular transfer of these proteins. So that's the secretion sequence here in green, and the internalization sequence in red. So these homoproteins are capable of intercellular transfer in an unconventional manner, so they're produced and secreted by one cell, then internalized by another, and once they're internalized, they can either go to the nucleus, have a transcriptional activity, or modify epigenetic mechanisms, or stay in the cytoplasm, act on translation, or even co-signal with other signaling pathways. And these non-cell autonomous activities of homoproteins have been demonstrated in various model systems, so the Drosophila, zebrafish, Xenopus, chick, and of course the mouse. And here we're interested in the transfer of the homoprotein OTX2 in the context of cortical plasticity. So first, during these critical periods of postnatal development, OTX2 protein, here immunostained in red, is present all along the optic trail, so in the retina, here in the thalamus, and in the visual cortex. But in the visual cortex, the messenger RNA of OTX2 is not present, so the protein has to be transferred from an extracortical source into the visual cortex. And once in the visual cortex, OTX2 protein accumulates preferentially in GABAergic interneurons, and more precisely in the parvalbumin interneurons, in the PV cells. In dark reared mice, at P30, which is a peak of plasticity in the visual cortex, OTX2 protein levels in the visual cortex are extremely reduced, suggesting that OTX2 transfer in the cortex is experience dependent. And then consequently, with a previous report, the dark rearing also led to a delay in PV cell maturation that we can see here by a decrease in the number of PV and WFA positive cells. And an exogenous OTX2 protein infused in the visual cortex of dark reared mice was internalized by the PV cells and was able to increase the number of PV and WFA positive cells, suggesting that OTX2 has an impact on PV cell maturation. So to verify this, the exogenous OTX2 protein was infused in immature visual cortex. And when we looked 5 days later at P19, when endogenous OTX2 levels are low, the exogenous OTX2 protein was found within the PV cells, and this premature localization of OTX2 to PV cells accelerated PV expression compared to the non-infused side. So PV cell maturation triggers the onset of the critical period, and therefore we examined whether this premature appearance of OTX2 in the visual cortex could also accelerate physiological plasticity in these mice. So in a wild-type mouse, without monocular deprivation, there is a natural shift towards the contralateral eye in the visual cortex. And a monocular deprivation of 4 days at P25, which is close to the peak of plasticity, leads to a shift in ocular dominance towards the open ipsilateral eye. And this shift only happens when the visual cortex is plastic. An early OTX2 infusion in the visual cortex led to premature plasticity at P18, but also premature closure of the critical period, as monocular deprivation is no longer induces plasticity at P25. So infusing OTX2 protein directly in the visual cortex before the natural onset of the critical period accelerates both the onset and the closure of the critical period for ocular dominance. So to confirm that OTX2 regulates PV cell maturation and critical period plasticity, we performed loss of function experiments. So using a OTX2 flux to mice, we observed that when one OTX2 allele was excised using Cre recombinase, cortical OTX2 signal was extremely reduced, as well as PV expression that retained an immature appearance. And concomitant with PV immature expression, monocular deprivation failed to induce plasticity at P30 in these mice lacking one OTX2 allele. And this plasticity could be restored by diazepam treatment that enhances GABA-A receptor occurrence, confirming that OTX2 acts on cortical plasticity through functional maturation of the inhibitory circuits. And we observed that the infusion of an anti-OTX2 antibody directly in the visual cortex to block the extracellular OTX2 prevented plasticity during the critical period. And this was not the case with the intracortical injection of an siRNA against OTX2, confirming that the effect of OTX2 on the plasticity is in a non-cell autonomous manner. So this is just to summarize this. So this showed that OTX2 is an extracortical regulator of cortical plasticity, as when we reduce OTX2 amount in the cortex, we delay the onset of the critical period. And that, again, a function of OTX2 accelerates both the onset and the closure of the critical period. So the next question was, why does OTX2 specifically localize to these parvalbumin interneurons? And I mentioned that maturing PV cells are gradually enwrapped by this special extracellular matrix called the perineuronal nets. In the layer 4 of the visual cortex, the majority of OTX2 positive cells are surrounded by the perineuronal nets. And it's been said before that these PNNs are enriched in complex sugars that are called glycosaminoglycans, or GAGs. And interestingly, within OTX2 sequence, we found a consensus glycosaminoglycan binding motif with basic amino acid here in red, and especially an arginine-lysine doublet, the RK doublet, that's located just before the homeodomain. And as Jessica and Joost said, we did several experiments showing that the glycosaminoglycans of the perineuronal nets are indeed required for OTX2 specific transfer to the PV cells, and that this RK doublet was essential for the binding of OTX2 to the glycosaminoglycans. And so to further study the importance of OTX2 GAG binding in vivo, we generated a mouse model with a disrupted interaction between OTX2 and the glycosaminoglycans. So that's the OTX2AA mouse, and the study I'm going to present was done in collaboration with the group of Takao Hench in Harvard. The AA mouse is a knock-in mouse with just the RK doublet replaced by two alanines, in which therefore the specificity of the interaction between OTX2 and the GAGs of the PNNs is partially disrupted. When we looked on immunostainings for OTX2 and WFA in the visual cortex of these mice, we observed an increased number of OTX2 positive cells in the visual cortex of juvenile OTX2AA mice. And we also observed an increased percentage of OTX2 positive cells that are not surrounded by the PNNs. So this suggests that the endogenous OTX2AA protein shows less preference towards the perineuronal nets and seems to be internalized by a wider range of cells. So if the amount of OTX2 protein that arrives in the cortex is the same, we would expect OTX2 to be more diluted in the visual cortex of these AA mutants. And this is indeed what we observed. Well, in a wild-type mouse, here from P20 to P60, OTX2 accumulates in the PNN-surrounded cells. We can see that this is not the case in the AA mutants. the arrival of OTX2 triggers the maturation of the PV cells. So we looked at the maturation of these cells in these mutants with two markers of their maturation, WFA for the PNNs and parvalbumin itself. So we looked from P14, which is the opening of the eyes, to P200. And we observed a decreased intensity for both stainings from P20 to P60, which suggests that the PV cell maturation is delayed in the AA heterozygous mice. And to assess the functional consequences of this delay, we performed monocular deprivation and then therefore recorded visual evoked potential. So this was done by a postdoc in the lab of Takao Hensch. So once again, a decrease in visual acuity following monocular deprivation indicates cortical plasticity, a plasticity that only happens between P20 and P40 in a wild-type mouse. And so this graph summarizes all these experiments, showing that the AA heterozygous mice are only plastic at P100, not at P30 like wild-type mice, and not anymore at P200. So these suggest that the critical period for ocular dominance is shifted, is delayed in the AA heterozygous mice. One of the main sources for cortical OTX2 is the choroid plexus. So the choroid plexus is the structure found in the ventricles of the brain that produces the cerebrospinal fluid. And OTX2 is highly expressed by this plexus, and the plexus secretes OTX2 protein in the cerebrospinal fluid. So by secreting the protein in the CSF, the plexus can reach, it can send OTX2 to various regions of the brain. And indeed, we saw that OTX2 protein gains access to the parvalbumin interneurons in other regions of the cerebral cortex. So this OTX2 AA mutation may have a more global impact beyond the visual system. And to look at this, we looked at two other cortical regions for which critical periods had been nicely demonstrated. So that's the auditory cortex, which has a critical period for thalamocortical connectivity between P12 and P15, and the limbic cortex, which has a thalamocortical a critical period for acoustic preference between P15 and P25. We stained these regions for OTX2, PV, and WFA at ages for which these critical periods are closed in wild-type mice. So that's P20 for the auditory cortex and P60 in the limbic cortex. And similarly to the visual cortex, we observed an increased number of OTX2 positive cells, suggesting that OTX2 AA is also mislocalized in these regions, and decreased intensity of the stainings, suggesting that PV cell maturation may be delayed in these regions. And consequently, the team of Takao Hensch showed that the timings for the respective critical periods were also delayed in the auditory cortex and the limbic cortex. So to conclude on this part, the lack of proper accumulation of OTX2 in the parvalbumin cells surrounded by the perineuronal nets due to this RK2AA mutation leads to a delay in the maturation of the PV cells that leads to a delay in the onset and closure of critical periods. So the specific recognition by OTX2 of the GAGs of the PNNs is crucial for the proper timing of critical periods, and that seems to be true at least in the three regions where we looked at. We observed that in the adult, OTX2 protein was still present in the cortex. And so we hypothesized that the constant arrival of OTX2 in the cortex was needed to maintain the mature state of the PV cells and therefore the non-plastic state of the cortex. So now what we wanted to do was to try to manipulate OTX2 transfer to the cortex to try to reopen windows of plasticity in the adult. To look at the reopening of plasticity in the adult, we worked with a mouse model for amblyopia. So amblyopia is a neurodevelopmental disease with a reduced visual acuity, cortical visual acuity for one eye. And so to render a mouse amblyopic, we used long-term monocular deprivation during the critical period, and that leads to a permanent decrease in the visual acuity for the closed eye, as can be assessed later in life by recording the visual evoked potentials. So reopening plasticity in the adult visual cortex of these mice could rescue the visual acuity for the deprived eye. We first try to block OTX2 transfer by blocking its interaction with the glycosaminoglycans of the perineuronal nets. So for this, we used a synthetic peptide, the RK peptide, that represents the glycosaminoglycan binding motif of OTX2. And infusion of the RK peptide in the visual cortex of adult mice to compete with the endogenous OTX2 for the binding to GAGs led to a decrease in the number of OTX2 positive cells. And interestingly, this was accompanied by a decrease in the number of WFA NPV positive cells, supporting our idea that OTX2 constant arrival in the adults is needed to maintain the mature state of these cells. And so this suggests that a reduction in the amount of OTX2 in the adult cortex may reset the PV cells to a more juvenile state that's more permissive for plasticity. And indeed, when we recorded visual evoked potentials in amblyopic mice treated with the RK peptide, we observed a significant increase in the visual acuity for the once deprived eye. And so this indicates that we reopened a window of plasticity in the adult visual cortex. Our second way to block OTX2 transfer is to block it at the source. So I mentioned previously that one of the main sources for cortical OTX2 is the choroid plexus, as you can see here on this in situ hybridization on a mouse brain. And we can target specifically the choroid plexus by using a cell permeable Cre recombinase called CreTAT, because the injection of CreTAT in the lateral ventricles of the brain leads to a specific recombination in the plexus. So here on these images, you can see the specific expression of a reporter of recombination in the choroid plexus following CreTAT intraventricular injection. So we injected CreTAT in the ventricles of adult OTX2 floxed mice, and that leads to a decrease in the production of OTX2 by the plexus. And it also leads to a reduced amount of OTX2 in the cortex in these mice 15 days after the injection in the ventricles. So we've just seen that a reduced amount of OTX2 in the adult cortex can, well, lead to a reopening of plasticity. And indeed, what we saw here by recording the VEP in these, again, these amblyopic mice treated with the CreTAT in the ventricles, was that this knocking down OTX2 specifically in the choroid plexus reactivates cortical plasticity, as this is able to rescue the visual acuity of the deprived eye. But knocking down OTX2 in the choroid plexus leads to changes in the cell autonomous activities of OTX2 in the plexus. So in order to have a paradigm that only affects the transfer of the homoproteins and not its intracellular activities, we turn to single-chain antibody technology. So single-chain antibody, SCFV, means single-chain variable fragment antibody, and we obtained the anti-OTX2 SCFV by directly subcloning the heavy chain and the light chain from hybridoma cells secreting a monoclonal anti-OTX2 antibody. And so these SCFV retain their original binding capacity and specificity despite the removal of the constant fractions, and they've already been used with success in the lab to block extracellularly the transfer of two other homoproteins that are PAC6 and NGRELD in the Xenopus, in the chick, in the zebrafish, and in the fly. And so here we generated three inducible knock-in mice with the single-chain antibodies against three homoproteins, PAC6, NGRELD, and of course OTX2. So this is the construct for these mice. Before the SCFV, we've added a stop cassette flanked by two LOXP sites, which allows for a Cre recombinase-induced expression of the antibody. And within the SCFV construct itself, we've added an IgG signal peptide to force secretion of the antibody, and six MIG tags for detection of the SCFV. As this is still ongoing work, we haven't yet worked with amblyopic SCFV mice. But what we did was injecting the CRETAT, once again, in the lateral ventricles of adult anti-OTX2 SCFV mice and of adult anti-PAC6 SCFV mice as controls. So this injection leads to the production of the SCFV by the plexus and to its secretion in the cerebrospinal fluid, the idea being that it could trap the homeoprotein before it arrives in the cortex. And when we looked 15 days later in the visual cortex of these mice, we observed a strong decrease in the number of PV and WFA positive cells in the visual cortex of the anti-OTX2 SCFV mice. And so once again, this suggests that this cortex is back to a more juvenile, less mature state. So to verify this, we did quantitative PCR on cortical samples from these mice, and we looked at the expression of genes that are known to be involved in plasticity states. So for instance, ARK, FOS, NR4A1, and EGR4. And we saw an increased expression of these plasticity genes in the anti-OTX2 SCFV cortex 15 days after CRETAT intraventricular injection. So here, the SCFV that's produced and secreted in the cerebrospinal fluid may sequester OTX2 before it arrives in the visual cortex, and so that would lead to a reopening of plasticity in the adult visual cortex. So this is to summarize and to put everything in a context. So we've seen that during postnatal development, after sensory input, which in the case of the visual cortex is the opening of the eyes, OTX2 is transferred in the cortex and accumulates preferentially in the pavalbumin interneurons surrounded by the perineuronal nets. Then a first threshold of OTX2 triggers the maturation of these PV cells and therefore the onset of critical period and cortical plasticity. Then OTX2 continues to accumulate until a second threshold for which the inhibition is mature, the balance between excitation and inhibition is consolidated, and the cortex is no longer plastic. So OTX2 maintains the mature state of these PV cells and of the perineuronal nets. So there may be a positive feedback loop between OTX2 and the PNNs, as the PNNs are required for OTX2 preferential transfer to the PV cells, and OTX2 enhances PNN expression or assembly. And in the adult, the constant arrival of OTX2 is needed to maintain the mature non-plastic state of the adult cortex, as we have shown that by blocking the transfer of OTX2 in the adult cortex, we can reopen windows of plasticity, and by reopening windows of plasticity, we can cure amblyopia, for instance. So now really what we want to know is how OTX2 does what it does in the cortex, and so that's our main perspective. We are looking at OTX2 targets in the PV cells. We are also looking at, as I said at the beginning, homoproteins can co-signal with other signaling pathways. So we are looking at the hypothesis that it could interact with BMP pathway for the onset of the critical period, and maybe with SEMA3A for the closure of the critical period. And we've also recently started a project on a possible link between OTX2 and the epigenetic modifications that happen in the PV cells during the critical period. So I'd like to thank all the people who participated in this work, Julien and Marine, who were PhD students in the lab, the people who participated in the SCFV mice characterization, Clémentine, Eva, and Michel, Ariel and Alain, and our collaborators on the OTX2 AA transgenic mice, the team of Antonio Simeone in Naples, who generated the OTX2 AA mouse line, and the team of Takao Hench in Harvard, who did all the electrophysiological and behavioral analysis on these mice. And so here are the main funding sources of the lab, and thank you for your attention.